Let's start by talking about your family and your grandparents and your parents. Do you remember your grandparents' name by any chance?
No, I never did see my grandparents.
Uh-huh.
He went away in the Civil War, and I never did see him.
Uh-huh. He died in the Civil War?
Yeah.
Did you know their names at all?
I think his name was William.
Uh-huh. And on your mother's side, did you know her parents, your mother's parents?
My father was J.W. Rotherney.
Uh-huh. And where were they, and what kind of work did they do?
They were living in Taylorsville, North Carolina, then.
And then how about your father? What was his name, and where did he grow up?
My father, let's see, you asked me about where my father lived.
Uh-huh.
He grew up there in Taylorsville.
Uh-huh. Do you know what year he was born in?
I'm not sure. It seemed like it was 1861.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. And your mother, where did she grow up?
She grew up in Wilkes County.
Uh-huh.
Near Wilkesboro.
Were her people farmers?
Yeah, they were farmers.
On both sides of the family?
Yeah.
And
both sides of the family were farmers.
Uh-huh. And what was your mother's name?
She was a Bibber before she married a Robinette.
Uh-huh. And then how did they get to meet your parents?
I reckon they grew up sort of in the same neighborhood. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And then your daddy continued to farm?
Yeah, yeah.
And you were born in what year?
Yeah, I was born on the farm in
1891. Well, you're very healthy for 86 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you were born on the farm. What kind of farm was it? Do you remember?
Well, it was just a mountain farm, and part of the time we plowed a steer.
Uh-huh.
And then got down to a mule. So that was the way it was.
Uh-huh. What kind of crops?
We just raised wheat and corn, just general garden stuff.
How many kids were there at the time?
In my family, brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
They were eight of us, but two of them died before. Mm-hmm. They were just small when they died.
Uh-huh.
The rest of us lived to be grown then.
Well, how were you in the family? What position, what number were you in the family of the eight?
Well, it was the two that died little, there were four ahead of me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then, how much schooling did you have as a child?
I didn't have any.
You never went to school?
No. Uh-huh. I've got practically no schooling. I reckon I might not finish the third grade.
Mm-hmm.
That's practically none, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever want to go on? Or?
Well, no, I never did know much about what was ahead of me. Went to work, I reckon, never did think about going on to school.
Mm-hmm. When did you go to work, after the third grade? Or after?
Well, my father moved off of the farm to Charlotte in 1907.
Uh-huh.
And I started in textile work in 1907, just when I was about 12 or 13 years old, uh-huh. Something like that.
Why did he move to Charlotte off the farm?
Well, my first wife was raised up in the textile, too.
Uh-huh. Well, why did your daddy move off the farm?
How's that?
Why did your father move off the farm in 1907?
Well, we were just renters and hard getting along, and some of his neighbors there went to textile business in Charlotte, and the man there run the mill, he wanted some help, and they come back up there and hired us to hired him to go to.
So your neighbors came back and got him to go up
there. Yeah, the man that owned the plant that we went to work in hired him to go out and hire help for him.
Uh-huh.
And so he just went up there in the mountains, picked up help, families that didn't know nothing about working, right. Took them and trained them. And
how did he train you? Do you remember that?
How's he done what?
How did he train you?
They just took us there and put us in the plant and had somebody in the plant to show us what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way we learned.
So your whole family went in?
Yeah, there's, I had one, two, there was two sisters and myself, and I had a brother and a sister. Then younger than me, we all went in the same plant at the same time, all green just the same way, and learned to work in that plant.
Were you all in the same room or in the same department of that mill in Charlotte?
No, we worked in little different apartments in the plant. They put me and my brother in the twister room to learn twisting, and I think one of my sisters was on a machine that they call reeling, and the other one of them was on spooling, and the other one was what they call winding. That's the way they spread us out in the plant.
Right. So you knew, in addition to your family, you knew other people from your area in the mountains that went to that same
plant? Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we knew other people from the mountains. That's the reason we were there.
Uh-huh.
There were two Bumgarner families there, same name, the brothers, and one of them's the one coming hard us to.
Uh-huh.
You know, this mill owner, he just paid him his wages to go out.
Right, and recruit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then how long did you work in that mill in Charlotte? What was the name of that mill in Charlotte?
I worked in that mill till I reckon it was about 1910.
Uh-huh.
And the overseer of that mill left there and went to another plant in Belmont, North Carolina, and my father went there and with him and his crowd with him. And we worked there about 12 months. Then my father, he went back to same plant in Charlotte then. And I didn't go to work in that same plant, and he went back. I went to another plant and went to work and got married in that time. Then I left home and started on my own.
What, did you know anything about textile work before you started?
Oh, no. I never had seen no town or nothing before I went to work in that textile.
What did you think when you first entered Charlotte and first went to work in the textile plant there?
Well, I didn't know where I was. Just from up there in the mountain and go where there's a lot of folks, I didn't know where I was walking or running.
Did you get used to it pretty quickly?
Oh, yeah. We got used to it pretty quick, of course. They pulled a lot of stunts on us, the folks in the mill there did.
Like what? On the country people?
There's some of the boys there had us lifting a machine to set it over, you know.
And you didn't know?
We didn't know what we were doing.
Did, you know, was that friendly or did, you know?
Yeah.
You weren't enemies with the other people who worked there?
No, just having fun. That's what they were doing.
Right.
And of course, we didn't get mad or nothing because we didn't realize it.
Right. So then, how come you decided not to go back to Charlotte when your daddy went back to Charlotte?
I went back, but I went with my cousins up in Wilkes County and stayed up there a week. And they, now come back then, they didn't want to put me to work, just going to get a little even with me, you know. And this
you went up to Wilkes County, or why? Why would they want to get even with you?
Well, I just went up there, visited around, and stayed a week, you know, and come back. Then they were going to hold me off a few days before they put me to work. And I knew an overseer that was that I had worked for before at another place, and I wrote to him for a job. I was about 19 years old then, and I wrote to him for a job, and so he was needing help, and he just gave me a job, and I went to work for him.
Where was that other place?
That was at a place in Ardell County that's called East Munbo, a new mill that started up over on the river, run by water power.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did the new mill differ from like the one in Charlotte?
How's that?
Was this new mill different to work in than the one in Charlotte in any way?
It's the same kind of work.
Uh-huh.
In fact, it's just a new mill, but it's the same kind of work.
Right, and you were doing twisting there too?
Yeah, I was doing twisting there too. That's what I done with that.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you know this overseer at this new mill? How did you get
to Well, we knew of him and knew when he went there and and all. He tried to get my father to go up there. And he finally did eventually go up there.
Your father.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But I got married and left Charlotte then and went to Hickory and went to work. And I was working in Hickory.
In furniture or in textiles?
Same kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
And after I got married, I went to Hickory and went to work. And while I was at Hickory then, my father moved to East Munbo, and I quit Hickory and went back to East Munbo.
To be with your father, or to, why did you go back there?
Well, just get close home, I reckon.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you meet your first wife?
How's that?
How did you meet your first wife?
Well, it worked pretty good.
Uh-huh. Well, where did you meet her? Was she working in the mill, or how did you meet her?
Yeah, he were working in the mill. Ooh. My father was.
Yeah, but I'm talking about when you got married. How did you meet your first wife?
Oh, she was a mill worker too.
Uh-huh, in that same place.
Yeah, we was working in the same mill.
And you got married in 1910.
I got married in 1911.
1911. When you were still working
in the same mill.
Uh huh.
And go down to truth about it. My wife, she got pregnant, and I owned a house, and they had company houses, you know, and they didn't want to give me a house.
They didn't?
They didn't want to give me a house.
Uh-huh.
Said they couldn't do without my wife in the mill.
Uh-huh.
And I had a friend that had left there and went to Hickory, and I wrote to him to get me a job, and I'd come up there, and so he wrote me right back.
Mm-hmm.
So I went up there on Saturday, and he said that he wrote me back and said he had me a job. See, I could farm boilers then, too. I'd done learn to do that.
How'd you learn?
And he had, I learned there at that same mill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And worked assistant farming and on the yard and stuff like that for 12 months.
So he had a job to fire boilers up in Hickory?
Yeah. And this fella, he wrote me back and said he had me a job located in a chair factory, was going to start up there, fire and run an engine.
Mm-hmm.
And I got up there, he said he is just one day late going to the chair factory and they done put a man on. And he said, I know you can get a job over here in the mill, though, because they're starting up night work.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a job in the mill and went housekeeping in Hickory.
Mm-hmm. Was that the first time you had done night work?
Yeah.
That was the first time you had done work at night?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, I didn't work at night then. He wanted me to go to work at night, but I wouldn't go.
Uh-huh.
But he'd give me day work.
Uh-huh.
But the fella that run the job that I took, he put him on nighttime as overseer and give me his job.
Huh. Did a lot of people go back and forth between the furniture and the textiles and Hickory?
Yeah, they was right smart of changing back then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were both of those pretty new industries at that time? The furniture
and
the textiles? And did most of the people come from the mountains, or had they?
They did for this first plant where I was at there. He practically had all of his help nearly from the mountains.
That was in Charlotte, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Got them just like he got us.
Uh-huh. Then your first child was born in what year?
How's that?
Your first child was born
in Hickory.
In what year? When?
In 1912.
Then, when did you have your other kids? How many kids did you have all told?
All told?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just had four. I just raised four.
Mm-hmm. When were they born? When were the others born?
Well, they were born at different eras. I moved about right much then.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't stay at East Monbo but about 12 months.
Right.
And I left East Monbo then and went to Landis, North Carolina.
Where is that? Which county is that in?
That's 12 miles beyond Salisbury.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed there about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then...
Why did you move to Landis?
What they do in Landis?
No, why did you go over there to Landis?
Well, they offered me a little bit more money at Landis, and I was making for that.
Uh-huh.
So... I just went ahead and changed, and I worked there 3 years, and I saw an ad in the paper for help over here at Altima Hall, and I answered it, and he gave me a job, a little bit more money, so I moved to Altima Hall.
Doing the same kind of work pretty much?
Same kind of work. I'd done a little different work, though, in the mill. I'd learned different jobs. I was running warpers.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at Landis, and then I went on warpers at Altima Hall. Then my brother-in-law was pastor over here at Hope Memorial Church and lived in Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And I was visiting him, and one of his members lived right back of me back here, told me that day I went with him to church, said, he's going to eat dinner with us then. We expect you to eat with us, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, any war suits me all right. So now come out, and the preacher told him that he had gotten mixed up on his dates, and he have to go to another place. He said, call me by my name. He called me Jeff. He said, I'll let him go with you, though. He can eat as much as I can. So I went on down to eat dinner with Mr. Knott, lived back here. And he was telling me about him putting in some twisters out here at this plant.
Uh-huh.
And he says, I know. He says, they ain't got nobody to run them. He says, I know you can get the job. He says, he's telling my brother-in-law about that then, that night. He tried to get me to ask the Mr. Williams about it then. He was superintendent of Sunday school over at the church.
Uh-huh.
And I told him, no, I'd wait and see him. But he drawed him off. The streetcars come to the corner right out there.
Mm-hmm.
Then he rode streetcar from Burlington to Graham. So while
your brother-in-law, or Mr.
brother-in-law
right.
did.
Mm-hmm.
So he was waiting for the streetcar, and he told Mr. Williams then, he says, he'd like to have a job of running twisters. So he said, well, I'm going to need a man in a short while. If I can get in touch with him, I'd be glad to have him. And so one but about 3 or 4 weeks till he called up over there. And
up at Altima Hall.
Altima Hall and called for me. And so I come over here and talked to him and took the job and moved over here in June of 1917.
Now... Were you going to the church over here when you were living in Altima Hall?
No, I was going to a church up there then.
Uh-huh. Did you come into Burlington very much when you were living there?
No,
that time?
Didn't come in very often, because back then they didn't have no way of coming much. You had to hire somebody to bring you.
Uh-huh.
Tell the truth about it. And then when I went out there to go to work, I walked from the corner yonder to Altima Hall on Sunday evening before I went to work.
Is that right?
Monday morning.
That was about how far? About 8 miles?
About 8 or 9 miles.
8 miles, uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, had you known Mr. Williams before?
No.
Because you didn't belong to this church?
No.
No. And had he been the superintendent of the Sunday school as long as he had been the superintendent over here at the plant?
I believe he was superintendent of the plant before they organized the church, I believe.
Uh-huh. And then the company organized the church, or
how? No, the people organized the church, and he just happened to be in the neighborhood, you know, and went in with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he was superintendent of Sunday school over there, I suspect, close to 40 years.
Right, right. And he lived in this neighborhood, too? Or where did Mr. Williams live?
He lived then. There was a building right there in the street.
Mm-hmm.
You see that door goes in yonder?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a building just about even with this new building here, the front of it was, and
mm-hmm.
set back here, that was the plaid mill office then.
Right.
And Mr. Williams stayed in that office building.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he was basically right here in the neighborhood.
Of course, this house wasn't here then.
Oh, it wasn't?
No. And, but he built this house for an overseer, and when he hired me, he rented a house down on Brook Street, mm-hmm. and I lived down there 4 years before I come up here.
Mm-hmm. Now, when World War I came out, did you have to fight, or?
World War I came out the day that I come over here and got my job. I went up to Morton Township and registered for World War I.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened? You never
called? They never did call me.
Uh-huh. So nothing really happened.
No.
How about as far as the plant did work? Was work disrupted or during World War I?
Yeah, during World War I, it wasn't no longer from right here,
mm-hmm.
back down at the, before that office building here. There'd been some built on both ends of it since I come here.
Uh-huh. But did the war take a lot of people away from the plaid mill at that time?
I don't think it took many.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it took many. They wasn't working too many then, because it was just a small plant.
Mm-hmm. Did your wife go into the mill?
She didn't work any in the mill here, no.
Uh-huh.
She just house kept.
Uh-huh. Was that the way that you wanted it also?
Look after the house and children.
Uh-huh.
I had 3 children then.
By that time. And so she was the person that took care of them.
Yeah.
The then you started as a twister here, Tim?
How's that?
In 1917 here at the plaid mill, did you start here as a twister?
Yeah, I worked as a twister from June till Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And they closed them down. They didn't run them.
And Christmas
was. And they put me in the dye house.
Uh-huh.
And I worked in the dye house 22 years. I was like to froze to death out, and they put me out there at Christmas.
Right.
It was so cold, they didn't have heat in the dye house. It was so cold in there. And I told my wife, I says, and then when spring comes, I'm leaving here.
Mm-hmm.
But when spring come, the overseer dying said, yeah, they accumulated, they need some more help.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to have some help to help him, and he was going to put me to, gonna learn me to mix dyes,
mm-hmm.
let me be his assistant.
Mm-hmm.
So I started then, and I worked that 22 years, learning to mix dyes, and I got so I mixed the dyes, and I'd mix them and put them on until they moved the dyeing away from out there over to another plant across town.
Right.
That threw me out with the plaid mill then.
That was when you left the plaid mill?
Yeah, I went over there with the dyeing equipment,
mm-hmm.
stayed over there 3 years. They didn't run that regular over there, and I needed regular work. And there's a fellow Splawn that was shift foreman out here, and he opened up a shop of making temple rollers, a little roller made out of cork for looms about that long.
Mm-hmm.
He opened up a shop there, and he gave me a job working for him, making them things.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for him 6 years, and mill's gotten kind of tough luck again, got closing down, you know, and
mm-hmm.
he got so many rolls ahead, well, he had to shut down.
And then he worked for
Mel. And I went back over to Piedmont Heights to
mm-hmm.
help him move some machinery over there.
Mm-hmm.
I made it, that's the only time that I ever lost a job, but by not understanding why I lost it hardly, I still don't understand. But the way it was, I told Mr. Strawn that my wife was an invalid. She had had a stroke. And I told him I need to work all the time. And I had a chance of a job for 3 or 4 weeks over there, regular work.
Mm-hmm. And Piedmont.
Over Piedmont Heights, yeah. And moving machinery, helping Burlington Industry move machinery. And I went over there, and I'd come back by a little bit, and his work was about like it was. And so I kept on until that was in July, I reckon it was, so along about July, August. Anyhow, I come on back by till right after Christmas. I come by down there one day, and he had two boys in that work, and the fellow was working with me. He worked a short time and got along pretty good. He could draw a little sum from the Navy. He'd been in the Navy. And I just said to him like this, I said, well, it looked like business is picking up a little now. Yeah, he says, I asked Mr. Splawn the other day when he was going to call you back. And he said, I ain't going to call him back. And I didn't know that he wasn't going to call me back. But I did know he acted a little funny before. And I said, well, that's all right then. I says, I made a living before I went to work for him, and I'll make a living on.
And so you never figured out exactly why?
So I never said a word to Strawn about it. Never mentioned it to him. After this fella told me, he said he wasn't going to call me back. But after he done told me he'd call me back as soon as the work picked up, I just says to the fella, I said, well, that's all right. I says, I made a living before I went to work for Splawn, and I'll make a living on. And I worked on over Piedmont Heights on that machine business till in July. That was right after Christmas. And they just kept me on there. After they got all the machinery moved, they kept me messing about doing this and doing that on different kinds of little old jobs around the machinery. And July, then, they laid me off where it could go.
Which year was that?
Huh?
Do you remember what year that was? In the 40s?
No, let's see. Must have been around 50.
Uh-huh.
51, I reckon it was. And I come up here, there was a building, a new addition to that mill down there.
To the Plaid Mill?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I asked the contractor, the superintendent, about work. Well, he said he didn't need nobody right then. He said, this is awful hard work, too. I said, well, I know it's hard work, but I said, I've been used to hard work. Well, he went on. My wife, she is sitting here in a wheelchair, and I had a lady working for me all the time. And in a day or so, she got a word from her brother at Anderson, North Carolina, that he was real bad off and she had to go down there. And I hadn't found a job yet. So she went on, so I just took over at the house here and made me a garden back here and took care of my wife that summer till along about 1st of September. This fella come call me one day. I was going down the street. He says, I can give you work now, he said, if you want to work.
This fellow right here.
Yeah,
the
superintendent of the construction of the building, the mill. I said, well, if I can find somebody to stay with my wife, I says, I'll go to work. So I have him good luck and found a woman that evening, went to work the next day and worked out there till after Christmas. And they was done, about finished up and gone. They had a pile of lumber laying right there in the street and another one over on the other side of the mill. And they paid me what they was paying me to work out there to light up the lights on that thing of an evening and put them out of a morning. And they were still paying me that. And I had a friend that was in the office over at Broad Street School, and she said they needed a fireman over there at school. And I went over there, and, but before I went over there, though, I asked Mr. Little about helping to move that machinery from upstairs. They're going to move all the machinery from upstairs down in the new part where they live. I'd asked him about work doing that. So I went on over to school, and I hadn't been over there a week till he got to hunting for me around here. And he paid me a little more money, and so I quit school and come back over here and worked for him. Nearly 12 months moving that machinery. Me and two more fellas put the looms, some over 500 looms on what they call dollies, and they just shit down about 8 a day and move 8 a day and move them down to in the new part and put them to running. And me and these other two fellas put them on these dollies, and they had two or three more fellas would push them over to the elevator and take them down on the elevator.
Could only do 8 a day.
Yeah, and they just kept them running up there and cut off 8 a day and then start them up downstairs. That's the way we done that. And we got through with that. They was putting some new machinery up there where they was taking looms from. And my boss man put me with a fellow from the shop helping to set up that machinery up there. And I worked for him, a couple of months, I reckon. And one day they wanted me to go out in the shop and work out there. A day or two, and I went out there. He come in about a couple of days, and he said, "I thought you was coming back with me today." I said, "Well, I haven't." That was the last of words to him, and I worked on in his shop out there then until, sometime that fall, they got orders from Greensboro to lay off all they could do without, and they laid me and three others off in the shop at 12 o'clock to take effect at 3. So that pulled me out again.
Did they lay you off because you were older?
No, they just got an order from the main office to lay off some of the help at the mill, you know. And there wasn't no, I don't think it was any fault of anything except there's cutting off, doing less labor. And one of them, he went over to that mill across the street there and went to work the next day. And another one went back over to Piedmont Heights and went to work. And me and the other fella didn't have no job. And I couldn't find no job except night work, and I couldn't go on night work the way my wife was crippled up. And I was out here in the yard putting some screen wire on some screen doors for my son. He had a house down on North Ireland Street at that time. And the overseer in the winding department out there come out there and call me. He says, "I can give you work this week."
Where was that, at Burlington?
Yeah. Uh-huh. "If you want to work cleaning up machines." I said, "Well, I just soon clean up machines as anything." So I went on out there and went to work. Worked till Christmas. He said he couldn't give me work but 1 week. And he come to me just before Christmas. He says, "This has been a long week, hasn't it?" I said, "Yeah, it sure has." I said, "How come you can't give me, you have to have somebody on this work, how come you can't give me regular work on it all the time?" He said, "Well," I said, "I can't promise you nothing." And so that next day then, Mr. Linneman, he called me from from Walter Williams High School.
Right.
He is a needing a fireman over there. I didn't know what he wanted. I went downtown to pay my light bill. They called down there, the lady did it, stay here with my wife, and said he wanted me over there that evening. And the fella in there knew me, and I was going to walk over there, and he said, "No," he said, "I'll run you over there." And so I went on over there, and he wanted to give me a job firing his boilers. And he wanted me to go to work Monday morning, and I wanted to work a notice out there. And he said, "No," he says, "I've got to have somebody Monday morning. If you want it, I'll give it to you, and if you don't, I'll get somebody else." So I come on home and studied about it a little. And I says, well, that will be regular work, and it's about the same pay that I'm getting out here. Mm-hmm. Maybe I better take it. So I took it, went on over and went to work. I worked till in March 1952.
Out at Walter Williams. Out at Walter Williams.
Yeah, over to Walter Williams. Right. I worked. That was just for Christmas a little mm-hmm. while. And I worked till March 1952, and I saw one of the drivers from Melville Dairy over there one morning. I was talking to him about foreign borrowers. I told him, I says, I passed down the dairy there a lot of times, looked in that old boiler room down there, and I just often wondered, I believe I'd like to borrow them boilers they had down there. So in a morning or two, he come back by. And he called me over there. I went to work early over there, you know, had to go work early. Mm-hmm. Had to be there before 7 o'clock right. to get the building head up before school, yeah. before children come. He called me over there and said, if you want that job over at the dairy, he says, you better see them tonight. So they're going to get rid of the man they got today. Hmm. So I went over there that evening and talked to the man. He didn't pay me. Just about the same I was getting over there, and practically nothing. And so the man told me, he said, well, he said, I'll hold it open, let you come and try it out if you want to. Hey, you don't work over here on a Saturday, so you just come over here and try it out on Saturday. So I come work Saturday, and he comes and said, well, he says, what you think of it? I said, I don't know, it's pretty rough. It was the dirtiest, nastiest boiler room I ever saw. And the boiler was in bad shape and run down.
No air conditioning or anything.
Yeah, no, there wasn't no air conditioning, no. And he said, well, he says, I'll tell you, I'll hold it open for you next week, so you can try it out next Saturday again. And he come in, wonder how fast. I said, well, I just don't believe I'll take it. And that Monday night, I didn't sleep no much. Seemed like something said, you better take that job down there. So I went down there and I called him at his home Tuesday morning before he left home. He said, no, he said, he hadn't put nobody on it yet. He says, you can still have it, but he says, I want you to be satisfied. Well, I put in a notice over there and I worked a week over at school. Come on down there and went to work in March 1952 at Melville Dairy. And well, I worked on there till 3 years ago, just about now, and I retired.
At the age of what?
I worked 23 years down there.
So you were about 83?
I was near about 83 when I retired. I'd have been 83 in September, and I retired in about the 9th or 10th of July.
Did they make you retire, or did you want to
retire? Oh, no, he wanted me to work on. They'd still put me back on if I go down there and tell them I wanted to work.
What made you decide to retire at the young age of 83?
Well, I was doing a little too much messing about here with different ones in the garden. And children, they kept after me about I was doing too much work. And finally, they said, you're getting too old to work around machinery like that anyhow. And said, if something must have happened to you, he said, I don't know what we might do to the company. But I just kind of made up my mind that I believe I'd retire. Henderson Scott said to me, and I put in my notice, that our class said, I hate for you to see you quit, especially in the boiler room down there. And I went to work down there in March, and Mr. Scott, he always give always employees a supper at Christmas, a dinner, they call it, at Christmas. And Mr. Scott would always talk about saving money. And I didn't go to the supper, but some of the help told me what he did. He said, there's Robinette loans has saved us over $1,000 this year in the price of coal by borrowing them borrowers down. They saved us that much money on buying coal just this length of time. I'd worked on the borders pretty heavy, and I knew how to farm, and took interest in it, and tried to keep them up and get them in shape so they would save coal. And I cut down the coal. When I went down there, they was burning about 60 tons of coal a month. And when I left down there, they was burning about 12 carloads of coal a year when I went down there. And when I left down there, whenever they changed one of the boilers over to gas, they just got down to run boilers with about 7 carloads.
That's right.
Coal. About split the coal half in two.
Huh.
But they didn't do that much the first 8 months I was there, but I kept on messing with it till I got it down to where it saved them a lot of money.
Let's move back in time now and then move back up, okay?
Yeah.
How did you get this house here back in 1921?
They sold out to Burlington Industries. They sold the houses and so let the help that lived in them have the first chance at it. And so I just bought it.
Right. I mean, how did you get to move into this house if this wasn't Overseer's house before?
Oh, well, they built a house down here and right at the back of this K-Day plant.
Right.
Purpose for Overseer.
Uh-huh.
And that left this
open
and they give it to me then.
How did this house compare to the house that you had down on Brook Street?
Oh, it's a whole lot better than the one that I had down there. I just had an old trap of a house down there. It was an old house that had been moved back off of Webb Avenue up here, and had nobody lived in it in about 4 years since it had been moved back there. The porch was up about this high off of the ground to me, and the weeds was way up higher than the porch, and they knocked down enough to dig a ditch from the street out to the corner of the porch out there to put in a water spigot on the corner. The old house had built a room across this way and this way, and running a big porch run again this end out here, and they put the water spigot right out there. I had to get my water on the outside. They didn't have no water in the house down there. I had to get my water on the outside. They didn't have no toilet in the house. Had outside toilet, and they had built this house. This house was built in 1918, and this fella lived in it 2 years before I went to living in it, and I've been living in it ever since.
Did this house have electricity and water and indoor toilets and so forth?
Yeah.
When you moved in, so it had all those conveniences.
No, it didn't. It didn't have, it had electricity and all, but it didn't have no, it had water inside, but it didn't have no bathtub.
Uh-huh.
And no commode. Uh-huh. It had water.
Uh-huh. So you put in the commode yourself?
No, they finally put it in. They put water in bathtubs in all their houses. And they put the house, they built that and down there, and this one right at the back of me. And one right across the street over yonder, and one right in front of it on this side of that street that runs this way. And they built them, and they put bath and sewer and all in them, and with the plans to put it in all of them, and which they did, they put it in mine before they did in the rest of them.
Right.
I was the first, and after they got it in them, then they put it in all of them before they sold them.
Now, were your kids going to school at this time?
How's that?
In 1920, your kids were going to school? Is that right? Your children?
Oh, yeah, they were
going to school. Which school did they
Well, the oldest one started in what they call the Old Union Street, down here where Fisher Street is. They started in an old wooden building down there.
One-room schoolhouse, or?
I don't know where they had it particularly. Don't remember where they had it particularly to open. No. Anyhow, they went, all of them went down there. Some started off in that building there. Mm-hmm. Then they had to go to Broad Street then.
The high school.
Yeah. They had another old building out across the street there, the old wooden building that they, a lot of them had to go in before they got into high school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then they finally got into high school in Broad Street.
Mm-hmm. How far did your children go through school? How far did they go through school?
Well, my oldest son, she went through the ninth grade, and she went to work that summer. Then school was out here at the mill. They had a knitting mill out there, and she went to work out there. And I aimed for her to go back to school and finish her schooling. But somehow or another, she got it in her head to get married.
Yeah,
and she worked 1 year, and then she got it in her head to get married and didn't go back to school.
Mm-hmm.
And then had another son. He finished at Broad Street, finished high school.
Uh-huh.
And my next son then, that was a major man, he liked 3 units of passing his high school. And they wouldn't let him make it up that summer, and he wouldn't go back that fall. Instead of going back, he was born with a girl, and they both got it in their head and went down to Cannon's and took a business course. Instead of going back to school that winter, he took a business course. And you remember Cannon's that run the school down here, don't you?
Uh-huh.
And they took a business course at Cannon's. And the youngest of them, he finished high school down at Broad Street.
Did your sons go to work in the mill?
No. Well, the middle son did. My oldest son, he never did work nothing but newspaper. He's still working newspaper.
What kind of work? As a printer?
Well, he first went to work. He first carried papers down at Burlington Times. Then he went to work in the office. I believe what he done first was read proof.
Uh-huh.
And then they wanted him, they put on outside delivery, and I bought a car just for him to deliver papers in. They, 2 or 3 weeks after he went delivering papers, they went away up on the papers. He couldn't hardly make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
He was making pretty good to start with, but they went up on the papers. So he quit that and went back in the plant down there, reading proof, what he was doing. I don't know if he was reading proof or not. He worked at that a little while then, and he got a job in Charlotte with the Observer. And the fella was his overseer down at the Times News, said he knew that them people in the Observer office wouldn't do by him what they promised him. And he didn't work the Observer too long, so he quit and went to work for a job printing firm in Charlotte. He worked at that, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years, I don't know just how long. And he left there and went to Rock Hill, South Carolina, and worked there several years. And he left there and went to Panama City, Florida, and he's still in Panama City, Florida.
Doing what kind of work?
Yeah, he's an advertising manager now.
Uh-huh.
In the Panama City Herald.
Huh. Well, were there many people, say, in the 1920s and 1930s who were also from the mountains in this community here?
Not too many from the mountains in this community, no.
Did you ever go back to the mountains very much?
Yeah, sometimes I do. Uh-huh. I go back up there once in a while.
Uh-huh.
We're going to have what's called a Robinette reunion next Sunday week, the second
uh-huh.
Sunday in July.
Uh-huh.
We'll have, it's not right in the mountains, but it's sort of between here and there.
Mm-hmm.
If you know where Bunker Hill Campground is out there, this side of Hickory, that's where they have the reunion at.
Mm-hmm. Every year?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now, when the Depression came along, what happened here at the Tile Mill?
Yeah, I was working out there when that depression was.
And what were conditions like in Burlington and in the village here during the depression? What were things like? What were conditions like during the depression?
It was pretty rough then. I've been laid off for many a day out there when that depression was going on, and they called me back before I got home. I maybe stopped talking to somebody, and then something come in that they wanted done. They knew about shut down out there in that depression, but
did this mill ever close down during the depression?
Yeah, they had pretty rough there 1 year, and then Mr. Copeland, he got in with this synthetic stuff, you know, and got it started, and they didn't hardly know what depression was after they got that started.
Uh-huh. When did they bring in the synthetics here?
Long about, right at the close of the depression.
35, 36, 37, around there.
Yeah. About 34 and 35, mm-hmm. they started with that synthetic stuff, and mm-hmm. it got to going pretty good. The cotton business was dull there for a long time.
Now, of course, that didn't affect the dye room that much when they were on the synthetics, but what kind of changes did that bring in other parts of the mill?
How's that?
What kind of changes did the synthetics bring to other parts of the mill? Did it make a change in the conditions at all? You know, was it easier to work with synthetics than it was cotton?
Well, they liked it better after they got used to it. It was about the same principle, but it's all different machines, you know, and it made a little difference. But they all took hold of it and got along pretty good with it, and they brought a lot of folks from other places here that had worked with it.
Uh-huh. Like from where?
Several from High Point and some from over across town over there. Come over here. Yeah.
So, do you remember when the union tried to come here, when the mill was dynamited?
Yeah, I was laying here in the bed, and then when they dynamited it, woke me up, and I was out there in 15 minutes after the dynamite went off.
Uh-huh.
See, I was deputized as kind of an officer
during
that strike was on, and it was pretty rough.
Now, you were deputized by the sheriff here?
Yeah.
That was Mr. Stocker?
Yeah.
John Stocker?
Yeah, Stocker. Wasn't it Story then when that?
Maybe so.
I'm not sure which one it was.
They
swore me in and one or two others of the. I was kind of classed as an overseer, you know. I was called what they called second hand. That's what I was.
What was that? What did that mean? Second hand?
Well, that's the assistant to the foreman, you know.
Uh-huh.
I was the foreman of the dye house's assistant. Mm. Back to the business, I done the biggest part of the work in the dyeing except figuring the dye. I couldn't figure.
Right. Right.
If I'd have been so I could have figured, I'd have went to places in the dyeing business. Because Alan Yant come in, sit here in this room here one night and talked to me 2 hours. Tried to get me to go to Glen Raven and take his dye house. And I wouldn't go on account of I didn't have figuring education.
Did you feel bad about that?
And he said, well, I said, we can figure in the office. I said, I know you can, but I said, that ain't like you can figure yourself. And so I wouldn't take the job. I just stayed on out there till they moved it away.
Didn't feel bad about that? Did you feel bad that you didn't know how to figure?
No, I never did get to where I could figure anything like in fractions or anything.
Right.
And you were working in that dye business.
Right.
About all of it's fractions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, did you ever regret the fact that you never learned how to do fractions and so forth?
Well, yeah, I kind of did.
Uh-huh.
But the only thing that I ever regretted in my work line, I got it in my head one time to fire on the railroad, and I let that get away from me on a little accident that happened, and always did hate that, but otherwise, when I went along, was that work highly easy.
Right. Was that when you were a young man, when you wanted to fire on the railroad?
Yeah. Uh-huh. That was back in about 1913 that I got it in my head that I'd like to fire on the railroad. Mm-hmm. And I was living at Hickory then. One morning they had a wreck down below Hickory about 3 miles, and I went down there and looked at it. Seen two men facing under the wreck, and the other one, I didn't see him, but he'd fell off out there, and the pipes from the boiler had scalded him to death. And that kind of put the damper on me apart on the railroad. And I always did regret, though, that I didn't go ahead, and, because it was good money, and I never did make no money much in the mill business, no other. What's, like I told Mr. Scott not long ago, though, I was down there talking to him one day. I said, well,
Anderson Scott.
I said, I never did make no money much, but I said, I made enough that I got along, and I'm been getting along pretty good. I don't regret it. I told him, I says, I never did make no money here. He said, I know you didn't, he said. Well, I went to work down there for 90 cents an hour.
Uh-huh. That was in 1952,
53? Yeah.
Now, when this strike came by in 34, what
happened? No, I said 90 cents an hour, 90 cents a day.
90 cents a day?
Yeah.
Huh. And you were over 60 years old, too.
Yeah.
Now, getting back to the strike here, what did people hear at the Plaid Mill hear about the strike? You know, what did you know what was happening?
Well,
around the country or in the county or
they were pretty much all of them worked. Mm-hmm. They wasn't too many of them out. The bunch that was loafing around here mostly was from somewhere else.
Oh yeah, from where?
Yeah, there's a pile around here that's milled around. There's some few of our here, but was out on the strike.
Well, what did you hear about the strike before it started? Had you known there was going to be a strike or?
Yeah, we kept hearing a lot about it at other places, and finally come on to it, got here.
Uh-huh.
And it brewed up pretty rough here, and one morning the National Guard come along and drove them all off, and it ended.
Right out here?
Yeah.
Were you there that morning?
Oh yeah.
What was that like? On that day.
Well, it was a little bit rough. Some of them wouldn't move, but they stuck them a little with the beam, and then they jabbed them a little, or they get on the truck and go on.
I guess so.
Some of them run, some of them didn't want to move, but they jabbed one or two of them and picked them up and put them on the truck and took them on. That was about the last of the strike.
Now, what did you have to do as a deputy then, when you were deputy sheriff?
Oh, I just had to keep my eyes open if anything went wrong, you know. And
inside the plant or inside on the picket line?
And outside, too.
So did they give you a gun and a bayonet? Or did they give you a bayonet and a gun? Or
No, we didn't have no guns.
Uh-huh.
The only one that had a bayonet was the National Guard that morning.
Was that during your regular shift, or did you work your regular shift then?
Yeah, we worked the regular shift.
And then after your shift, you were deputized?
I think it was long about 9 or 10 o'clock, the National Guard. They advertised that they had to move, and they didn't listen, and so the National Guard came along and moved them.
Now, was there resentment? Or how did you feel when you had to, you know, say something against people who you had worked with, although you say they were mainly...
Well, I didn't have to say nothing. I just watched, and anything. There wasn't much disturbance, and there wasn't much to be done. Them fellows that dynamited the thing out there, that was at night, you know, and it was just, they just went along down the street and threw them in over the fence, and they wasn't much uproar about that. The law finally just found the one that done it and tried him. And
was it just one, or how many people were involved?
I don't think it was about one or two.
Uh-huh. Did you ever go down to the trials or anything?
No.
And
no, I never did go to the trial.
Do you remember anything about a company union being formed? Not the United Textile Workers, but one within the plaid mill itself, of the employees here in the plaid mill. Because I talked to one lady who had a little card that said, that was signed by Mr. Williamson, I think, here. And said,
no, I don't remember nothing about that, but this woman that wouldn't move out there at the bayonet, it said to me one morning when I was going to work, she says, there's all right in front of that door. I went in that door all the time there. There's all in there, out at the fence and around. He said, well, it says, you son of a bitch, you said, what are you going to do whenever we win this strike?
Uh-huh.
I said, well, I don't know, I ain't going to do nothing. You all win this strike. And just walked on, that's all I said.
Uh-huh. Who was this woman who said that to you?
Huh?
Who was this lady who said that to you?
She said it to me.
And she was one of the pickers or strikers?
Yeah, she was on the picket line.
Uh-huh.
Just said that to me.
Right.
And I didn't pay no attention to it, you know. I just walked on like I didn't. Yeah, and that's the way most of them passed them up. They didn't. I looked for Mr. Jim Copeland to get healed out there. He'd get out there amongst them, but they never did do anything to him.
Mm-hmm. So most of the people who worked there, what do they think about the union?
And most of the people that worked out there, whenever they come in to close it down, they come in one day to close it down, the overseers had orders if they done that, just to shut them down, go on, pay attention. That's what they done.
Uh-huh.
They closed the dye house down one time. We had some stuff running through, and we told them, just let us run that out, and they could have it. And so we just run that on out of our dye stuff so it wouldn't ruin it, and closed it down.
Mm-hmm.
Next day, then, they started it back up.
So what did you think about the union?
Well,
I know you didn't join.
I think the union's a good thing,
mm-hmm.
if it would run right, but I didn't think stuff like that was what the union really was,
mm-hmm.
and I still don't think it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the union's all right if they don't go to the extreme with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the union's a good thing,
mm-hmm.
but there's so many cases just like that, you know, that they go to the extreme with it, cause trouble,
mm-hmm.
and don't benefit nobody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did they ever have any other times when they tried to unionize?
No.
Here? Or anywhere in the area?
No, that's the only time that I will remember of them
uh-huh.
having any trouble with the union out
uh-huh.
there.
Uh-huh. Is the way that you feel about the unions the way that most of the people feel about the unions?
I think that most of the help out there, that's the way they feel about it.
Uh-huh.
They went along with the company they were working for pretty good. They had
mm-hmm.
they had some few at them.
Mm-hmm.
They had some few at them.
Now, you know, earlier on you said when you were a young man, you moved from place to place quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then after a while you settled down and worked here for 20 years.
I worked there 22 years, first go around.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly 24 years.
Right. Now why did you move around so much when you were a younger man and then settled down?
Oh, I don't know. I reckon I just young and didn't realize what was before me. And now when a man would offer me a little bit more money, just looked at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
The pasture's a little greener yonder than it is here. Maybe I'll get 10 cents more in the day or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Go on for a little more money, and still you didn't stop to count the cost of what it done to move. And then when I did get here and got settled down, I liked the town pretty good, and
mm-hmm.
and I didn't just got in my head that I didn't want to get in this moving business no more.
Mm-hmm.
Thought it cost money, and,
mm-hmm.
and so I just worked on here in Burlington.
Uh-huh. Now, do you think that was typical of a lot of other people, that they moved around a lot as a young man?
I think it was. I think it had a lot to do with it.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of times folks didn't get along with folks and move, but I wasn't that way. I don't know of a place that I had to leave or left. I always left on my own hook.
Right, right. Did the supervisors, you got along with the supervisors?
Oh, yeah.
Did they, now, you came, when you came back here looking for work in 1950 or 51, did you know that superintendent or that supervisor when you came back here looking for a job then?
Well, I never did ask for a job back anymore after long about 51 out there. Well, they were pretty good. Long about 51, that's when I was telling you about the fella just said he could give me a week work. Right. And, well, he was all right. And he was a nice supervisor. And he was nice when I went out there that morning and told him. I went out there on Saturday morning before I went to work at school. Told him, I said, well, I said, I won't be with you no more, I don't reckon, because I found a regular job and I think I better go to it. Mm-hmm. That's about the way I sold it to him. And he said, well, I says, oh, I don't blame you. Mm-hmm. So that, mm-hmm. And as long as he lived, I was a good friend to him and he was to me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No hard feelings.
Now, when you left, when they moved the dye plant to across town, what did you feel about that when you had to leave work?
Well, the reason I done that, you see, they come up here, the company owned this and they owned that over there too.
Mm-hmm. Where was the plant over there?
It's over at Piedmont Heights, at the Pioneer plant, they call it.
Right.
And the first plant that they ever built.
Right.
Well, they took a notion to move this dyeing that they had out there. They hadn't dyed none for this plant here in about five years. Mm-hmm. There was a dyeing for different commercial dyeing. Mm-hmm. We dyed a lot of yarn for a mill over here at Roxburgh, made towels. Mm-hmm. And we dyed some for this mill down here at Saxby Hall. And we was keeping pretty well busy at that. But the company, they took a notion that they wanted it for themselves, and they took the machines. They come up here one day to taking up the machines and moving them, and I didn't know a thing about it. And next day, then, they wanted me over at the other plant.
And why didn't you decide?
I went over there. I worked 3 years till they got shut down to about 2 or 3 days a week, and mm-hmm. I needed work somewhere else. I needed regular work, you know, and I found regular work somewhere else. That's the reason I went to work for Spawn. He offered me regular work. You know.
Now, did you resent the fact that they gave you a day's notice and then you had to move over to another place, or that they didn't tell you anything about it?
I didn't have to give no notice out there because...
No, that they told you that you were going to have to move out there and then the next day that you moved out there.
Yeah.
What did you think about that?
Well, I didn't think too much about it. In fact, I've been so I thought a little something about it, and not a went over there like I did, but I just went over there to run the machine, you know, and what I ought to done was to held out for the job of mixing the dye over there like I had out here, and I didn't, that was my mistake. Mm-hmm. They had a fella over there, overseer, then he had a young fella under him that mixed the dyes that didn't know a thing about mixing the type of dyes that they were going to use. Mm-hmm. And I worked along with him quite a bit, and he and I didn't get along too well together. We got along very well, but not too well.
This young guy?
And this young fella did. And we had a little run-in time or two, and then I got a chance of a job with Spawn. I just worked on my notice and got out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No trouble.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did you like about Burlington that made you want to stay here in town?
How's that?
What did you like about the city of Burlington that made you want to stay here and settle
here? Well, I just like the location and the people. It's friendly and everything nice. And go down to truth about it, I think it's one of the nicer towns as I've ever been in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What makes it different from other towns?
Well, one thing, I always thought they kept the streets and the sanitary part better than most any other towns I've ever been in. Mm-hmm.
Did you mainly do things in this neighborhood? Or
Yeah.
What kind of things did people do outside of work? Once you came home from work, what would you do?
Well, I didn't do too much of anything, only I always had a garden, and I'd work in that most of the time when I come home from work. Tell you the truth about it, while I was assisting and dying out there, I worked too much out there to do anything else more. Mm-hmm. Then you put in about 60 and 70 hours a week. Well, that's about enough.
I'll say. Did you belong to any organizations here?
No, I didn't belong to anything but the Junior Order.
What's the Junior Order?
Well, it was a state order, Junior, mm-hmm. but it's about going under now. I don't think there's any. You know, they had a branch of it for the women. They called Daughters of Liberty.
Uh-huh.
I think it's still functioning, but I don't believe the Junior Order is.
What kind of things did you do there in the Junior Order?
Well, it was just a kind of a club, you know, just meet mm-hmm. so often.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they met once a month.
Uh huh. Where was the?
We met over the Freeman Drugstore downtown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's where the hall was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just to get together more than anything else, right. And they had a little insurance with it,
right.
Sick benefit.
Is that mainly people who worked here at the mill, or was
they were some worked out there, belonged to it.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't too many though.
Mm-hmm. What do people do for recreation?
Back then, they didn't do too much of anything.
Mm-hmm. Did they go? Did musicians ever come up into this neighborhood, or
they?
Were there any musicians?
The men would a lot of times go around to the neighborhood store and sit a while of evening and chat and talk, and
mm-hmm.
but there wasn't too much recreation connected with this end of town. The churches, they'd have a little recreation, mm-hmm. once mm-hmm. different types.
How about the women? Would they have any place where they could gather together?
No, not that I recall.
Any women's clubs or
no
anything like that? Did they have a ball field over there? Didn't they have a baseball field over there?
A what?
A baseball field.
They had a baseball field down here.
Uh huh. Did the company have a team?
But I don't know just how now that was managed. I don't know who managed that. This half of the mill, though, the boys, they played. That's about the only recreation they had was the baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And the mill would let them have the truck to go to the games. I know one time before they built this road, Webb mm-hmm. Avenue up here, the road went up the railroad there, just a mm-hmm. dirt road.
Mm-hmm.
Platt Mill bought a truck. They used to have just a wagon, but they bought a truck with solid tires on it, and you couldn't, if you got in a muddy place, well, you'd stick up.
Uh-huh.
And we was going up the railroad there to a baseball game over at Alderman Hall one time,
mm-hmm.
and it was a little muddy right up, just up the railroad there, a little piece,
mm-hmm.
and stuck up, and we had to get out and push the thing out of the mud hole to go on to the ball game in.
So a lot of the people, were you on the team? Or
yeah.
You were on the team?
Yeah.
What position did you play? Do you remember?
Yeah, they just get a whole load of folks that wanted to go and get on that truck, and uh-huh. they'd carry them to the baseball game. It didn't cost them nothing to go.
Uh-huh.
And this game down here, I think they had it closed in one time. You had to pay when they were down here to get in, I think, one time.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, baseballs then, you just went and see them, and they'd take up an offering, and you'd chip in a little, mm-hmm. but not no regular pay to get to see a game.
Mm-hmm. Did you do most of your shopping around in this neighborhood, or
yeah,
did you go downtown?
Yeah, they done a big part of the shopping right around the neighborhood. If you go downtown, if you're going to buy furniture or clothing. Mm-hmm. You go downtown to Sellers or Whitted's, and, mm-hmm. and they had different ones. Belk's, they were down there.
That early? When did Belk's come in?
Yeah, Belk's and... But Sellers and Whitted's was the, I guess, was the oldest ones there was down there. Mm-hmm. I bought a big part of my clothing for myself and children from Sellers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we didn't make much money then. If we didn't have money enough to pay for them, they'd charge it and let us pay for it. That's where I bought most of all my furniture. Mm-hmm. Pay a little down and pay so much a payday. Mm-hmm. That's the way it went.
I don't know what other questions I could ask, other than some general ones. You know, what have been like your most memorable occasions, your biggest memories, and what do you think have been the biggest changes that have taken place over the period of your life?
Well, I don't recall. I reckon the biggest things taking place was going from horse-drawn conveyance to automobile.
Uh-huh.
There weren't but a few automobiles in Burlington when mm-hmm. I come to Burlington.
Where did you see your first automobile? In Charlotte? Or?
First time I ever saw an automobile to remember of was while I lived in Landis, mm-hmm. along about 1914-15. Mm-hmm. I don't think there but about one or two automobiles in Landis when I left there. I know this fellow Richie bought him a T-model Ford, and we hired him in 1916 to drive us over to my daddy's. He lived over at East Monbo then. It's about 30 miles over there. And that 1916 flood come, and mm-hmm. we hired this fellow Richie to carry us over there one evening to just see the river up and out of bank. That mill where my father was at was a two-story building, and that 1916 flood there on the river got up in the second story of the building and covered up all the machinery down in the lower floor, and got up in the second floor and covered up some got up into some of it up there on the second floor.
Right.
And they shut down for, I don't know, 2 or 3 months cleaning up the machinery and getting it ready. They finally cleaned it up though and got it ready to go back to work. Hmm. But it was just covered up in water and mud. And they washed it up and cleaned it up and oiled it up. Got it to running back again and run several years till Duke Power Company went in there to build that Lake Norman, and mm-hmm. they bought it. And they run it, oh, a couple of years, I reckon, after they bought it.
And Duke?
Yeah, Duke uh-huh. did, and they just closed it out and tore the building down and mm-hmm. backed water all where it was at. And then they went to filling up the dam.
What did your father do after that?
Well, he died long back then. He died there. He had a stroke, and mm-hmm. he and my mother both died at the same place.
At the same time?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Then, well, what kind of changes has the automobile brought about? What kind of changes has the automobile brought about that you can see?
Well, I think it's better. I think it's better.
Why is that?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, it gives folks more time to get out. They can go from place to place so much quicker. And, mm-hmm. And I think the radio coming in long about the time I come to Burlington. I remember when that one, as far as I know, the first radios ever in this part of the town. A fella up Webb Avenue there, worked in the mill out here, he bought one, had air tricks, you listen to it, and you go up out of his house and listen to the radio, you'd have to take your turn
Right?
To hold that to your ear so you hear.
So everybody would go to that one person's house to listen to the radio?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I never did go up there and listen to it much, but my children did, the boys especially. Mm-hmm. Fella Pulley had had the first in it. I knew it all up there.
What were some of the programs? Do you remember some of the programs?
No, I don't remember any of them.
Now, how have you felt that the community of Burlington has changed or the textile industry has changed since he first started?
I don't remember just how it started before I came here. I think the first was around the Hall River in Alamance over here.
Alamance, yeah.
First, but I don't remember nothing about that.
Right, but how do you think it's changed?
Yeah.
Since in your lifetime?
Well, it's changed quite a bit. They got more improved machinery. When I first come to Burlington, a weaver didn't run but about four looms.
Mm-hmm.
And now they got them over here at Copeland's that they run around 100.
Right.
Yeah.
That's in Hopedale?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's been a big change.
I'll say.
Taking a lot of difference in person running four looms and 100. I know when the first one, the two men that first run eight looms out there, they thought they were doing something running eight looms, and they were. They were making about twice as much money as the ones that run four looms.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, they just kept crawling up and adding up. Well, I reckon that's caused by them making more improved machinery.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't have done it otherwise.
Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
For people accumulating like they did, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any other changes in the industry at all? In the relationships to the employees or anything over time? Or the who works in the mills? Or?
No.
Do you have any regrets about your life?
Huh?
Do you have any regrets about your life?
No, nothing particular. The only thing that I have about my life is I didn't live it as a young man like I see it today. And if I knew what I know today and had to go over, I'd live it different. But if I had to go over it just like it was, I'd probably be about the same.
Well, how would you live it differently if you knew what you knew today?
Well, I'd try to live more Christian than I did. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I'd say.
Have you belonged to the same church since you moved down here?
Yeah.
How long was your brother-in-law the pastor here?
I belonged to Hokie Moore about 59 years now. I moved here in 1917. I joined pretty quick after I moved here. And that runs it pretty close to 59 years.
And you've always been pretty pleased with this particular church?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you think what you were taught to believe as a child differs from what people are taught to believe today? Religious beliefs.
Well, I guess the young people see it quite different from what we do. And I don't know whether they see it much different from what I did when I was younger.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do your religious beliefs today differ from when you were a child? How have they grown?
Oh, well, I don't believe there's been too big of a change. There's been some, but
in your own beliefs?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
The only thing is, there's just more recreation and stuff like that to call the young people's attention than it was when I was coming along.
Mm-hmm.
They've just accumulated more recreation and stuff like that to draw the attention of the young people than it did when I was coming along.
Has this church changed much over the years?
How's that?
Has the church changed much over the years, this particular one?
Not too much.
Uh-huh.
Not too much, no.
Most everybody who goes to the church lives right around here?
Yeah.
And worked at the flat mill?
Yeah, well, they've been a little change in that. a lot of our folks come from other parts of town, and they've been, and a lot of folks around close to ours goes to other parts. And mm-hmm. I think there's been some change there in that line, but outside of that, I don't think there's been too much change.
What are the most important things that you remember about your religious life?
Well, the most important change of mine, I just didn't read the Bible when I was young like I ought to, and I read it more now, and I can see the mistake I made. If I'd have read it then, I could have remembered more. Mm-hmm. You can't, now you get up my age, you can't remember. You can remember things that happened when you was a boy, like better than you can if it's day before yesterday or yesterday.
Right.
Now that's a fact.
Well, you have an amazing memory.
Yeah.
Remembering things in 1907.
Yeah. Well, everybody says that I have a good memory, but I forget things that happened that I can't remember like I could. Mm-hmm. And I guess I get about as good as anybody would be my age. I get out here and work like a nigger all day long. I went out there this morning and pulled 5 dozen corn, come back and shucked it and helped my wife, Silky. She's in there cutting it off now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to freeze it. And I worked growing that. I guess if I hadn't been working, helping folks around in the neighborhood here, like I was when I retired that summer, I suspect I'd have still been on down at Melville Plastics. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I went back the next spring after I retired in July and worked 3 months.
Up at Melville when you were 83?
After I were 83.
Uh-huh.
And then the next spring, this past spring, a year ago, I worked nearly 3 months. Worked over a month, and then Bill wanted me to come back down there this spring and help him again. And I was down there the other day and done a little work. And this fellow works in there. He says, "How about you doing this? And let me go do something else." And I told him, all right. I went down there one day, and one of the fellas said he needed an extra hand that day. Won't know if I would work for him. I told him, no. I said, I've got other things planned. I said, I can work 3 hours for you this morning if you want me to, if that'll help you any. He said he was loading a truck, and he just didn't have time to do it. I says, well, you go on, load your truck, and I'll do this then, till a certain time. I told him when to come back. He come back, and he wanted to, he says, you got a card out there? I said, no, I ain't got no card this spring. He said, well, get you a card. I said, no, I said, you just forget about what I worked for you this morning, let it be, I says, and he said, no, I said, I'd rather you'd have a card out there, but I told him no. Then Bill called me up one day, and see, I fired the boilers when I first went down there. What my job was, keep steam for them and mow the grass. There wasn't much to be mowed around there. And clean up the office and toilets. Mm-hmm. Of course, I had time to do that. Sometimes I'd get a little tight on it. But they put in a gas boiler over the years there, about, I'd say 10, 12 years ago maybe. And it didn't take more than about half as much time in the boiler room after they put in gas. Mm-hmm. Or it almost run itself. You'd have to go down there and watch your boiler and see, keep it blowed down and put your treatments in it and see if everything was running. And they was a bottling this here what they call ready whip, and I helped them on that most of the time. Then sometimes when I'd have to go to the boiler room, well, one of them would fill in where I was at till I could go down there and do what I had to do. And they had sort of a extra man, you know, that could do that. And so he called me one day along back in spring, like, and said, "Wonder what kind of wax I use on the floor," he said. Floors has got so in the office they don't shine. They don't look like they did when you was here. And I told him I just use regular wax. I got it over at Pine Chemical. And I was down there one day and I was looking at the floors. I said, "I'll tell you what's bad with your floors." I said, "You have to strip this wax off every once in a while and and put new wax on it to make it shine." I said, "If you need a new buffing machine," I said, "you need a new brush on your buffing machine." I said, "The scrub brush is wore out. It was wore out when I left here. And they hadn't took the wax off in nearly 3 years, you know, and I took it off once or twice a year while I was down there." Mm-hmm. I was down there 23 years, and I worked every Easter Monday and every 4th of July and every Thanksgiving Day when there wasn't nobody else working. I'd clean up the office from start to finish.
Where did you get such a history of working so hard?
Huh?
Where did you learn how to work so hard? Was it from your daddy
that,
or from...
That started when I was a boy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Stayed with me.
Uh-huh.
Still with me.
Uh-huh. How'd you get to work so hard, you know?
Well, I got along all right that
right.
way.
Right.
And I told him then, before I left that day, they didn't put nobody on the job that I was on. They just sort of divided it up around this and that. And they had a fella that made the mixes up in the mixing room that kindly looked after the boiler a little bit when they had to fire with coal. And they had the fella work in the shop. They put putting the chemicals and blowing down stuff on him, and they give the office cleaning up to a woman. "You go on back and hush. Ain't nobody bothering you." And I told Bill, and I says, "If you get some wax and a brush," I said, "I'll come down here and help this woman one day to clean up the office for you." Well, that just set him afar. He wanted me to come so bad. So I went down there one day and helped her to clean up the office. I don't know how come he would do it, but he paid me $40 for that day's work. Mm. After working all these years for him for nothing. Mm. But they were nice to me, and they are still nice to me too. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want no better folks to be around than them Scots are.
Mm-hmm.
They were really nice to me, and I hope I haven't said nothing today that would make anybody feel bad with me.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
You just called me and wanted to interview me, and I. Been just as honest with it as I could.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been very, very helpful to me. Mm-hmm. And thank you a lot for the interview.